right, this is Pure Decking episode 464. I guess we're episodes instead of shows now because I said it. This show, Pure Decking show number 464 for Thursday, January the 27th, 1967. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and reminding you that Nintendo Switch cartridges taste terrible. Morps, tonight I'm drinking bourbon barrel ale. We have a madman.
So, to be reminded of that, you had to have known it, forgotten it.
I'm sure it's not the first time I found that article and laughed at it.
Yeah.
I'm just
wondering why people are licking cartridges.
Well, the funny thing is, I have a Nintendo Switch. I don't actually own any cartridges for it, so I can't test it. But I found the article the other day from, like, 2017. It was just... I thought it was hilarious because they made video game editors or news copy guys lick fucking Switch cartridges. And then they were going around and finding old Nintendo cartridges to see if they tasted bad. They didn't.
Here's like my copy of Excitebike. And here's Mario Painter. Which one tastes better?
And the really, really bad, it would be like, well, we can't find any old Game Boy games to test. Let's just go to eBay, then we'll make the intern lick it. RU is also here.
And I'm here to tell you right now that Game Boy cartridges are far superior if you're looking for an after-game snack. I mean, dude. In a world that aired what you saw on Fox 2 days ago, and you question why they're licking cartridges.
I've got that story. That's in the list.
Like, of course they're going to be licking cartridges.
So, anyways, when you're so desperate for content that you're down to how do the cartridges taste.
Which is a more fragrant exhaust port, you know, in fucking Mega Drive or the Master System. I mean, that's the next thing, right? AMD, does it stack up to the taste?
What did you say? Master System and Mega Drive?
Yeah.
Okay, for some reason I heard Mega...
The exhaust port.
For some reason I was thinking the Mega Drive and the Genesis, and I was like, they're the same system. But you said Master System. They're not. Okay.
Yeah,
never
two
mind.
Ones.
Yeah, the 8-bit and the 16-bit. Okay, it's fine. I was wrong.
That joke checks out. It's an old joke, but it's still a good joke.
Let's just roll. We're gonna try to keep to an hour. Let's not waste half an hour of being bullshittery at the beginning here. First one up is from CNBC. NVIDIA is reportedly preparing to abandon its takeover of ARM. NVIDIA is quietly preparing to abandon its $40 billion acquisition of British chip designer ARM. Well, it hasn't been British for a while. And I forget the company that bought it, but anyways, Bloomberg News reported Tuesday. The U.S. chipmaker had told its partners it was not expecting the deal to be finalized, and the news agency reported, citing people familiar with the matter. SoftBank, which currently owns ARM, is ramping up preparations for ARM to go public in lieu of the NVIDIA takeover, according to Bloomberg. Quote, we continue to hold the views expressed in detail in our latest regulatory filings that this transaction provides an opportunity to accelerate ARM and boost competition and innovation, unquote, a NVIDIA spokesperson told CNBC by email. A SoftBank spokesperson said we remain hopeful that the transaction will be approved. Well, yeah, that, of course they do. ARM spokesperson directed CNBC to NVIDIA's statement. Shares of NVIDIA fell nearly 5% in morning trades on the news. The deal has faced close scrutiny from regulators around the world who worry it would give NVIDIA an unfair advantage in the semiconductor industry. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission last month sued to block the transaction on antitrust grounds, while British regulators are probing the deal over concerns it would pose a threat to national security. NVIDIA also faces multiple regulatory obstacles in China, where ARM has a joint venture with private equity firm Hapu Investments. You guys are missing a bit there. Didn't, like, ARM China split off and become its own company? think we talked about it. So
they may have, but if they did, that wouldn't have affected this acquisition.
That's also true.
Any partnerships ARM has would have, though.
ARM is often considered the crown jewel in the UK's tech industry. Its energy-efficient chip architectures are used in 95% of the world's smartphones and 95% of the chips designed in China. The company makes money from royalties paid by manufacturers. They've got a Bloomberg report linked in the article. So it's not really surprising, given the reaction we saw from all the different regulatory bodies about this, that they're going to block it. So NVIDIA is kind of basic, you know, kind of went, well, the writing's on the wall. They're not going to let us do this. So they're just kind of prepping for it. Now, that said, you know, 5% fall in the NVIDIA stock could be a buying opportunity. I'm not a financial person. Oh, wait, given my... I actually have to say, don't use stock advice for me. I'm bad at it. I actually have to say that. I just remembered something important. I don't. I can't give stock advice at all. So I was going to say buy it and hope that it goes through anyways, because of course it'll shoot up 20% if it does, probably more than that. But then I remembered some paperwork I signed the other day for the office, and I'm like, oh, right. That's called a conflict of interest, and you're not allowed to do that. This is why we use the pseudonyms on the show. But I pay for all the hosting. Damn it. Don't take stock advice from me, but...
there could be a buying opportunity.
That's true.
NVIDIA is still a decently run company, even if they don't buy ARM.
Well, I mean, GPU prices are still through the roof, and they're going to be for a while. I know Intel's supposedly bringing out their graphics cards, and I think AMD's trying to get another line of them going. But, NVIDIA is not going anywhere. And they've got the data center AI market wrapped up, too, so... Yeah, I mean, they're like IBM in the 80s, right? I mean, it's kind of a no-dust stock right now. No, they can make a bunch of bad decisions and tank their company, but it doesn't look like they're going to do that. So,
I think a bigger issue isn't going to be who's controlling the designs, but who actually has the manufacturing plan.
That's going to be
that's certainly the problem right now.
The more immediate issue.
I mean,
someone's spending $80 billion to start building them in, what was it, Louisville or something?
Something like that, but those plants aren't going to be operational for at least 5 years.
No, I know, but, long term.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically Samsung and TSMC right now, so, I mean, I think a couple of Chinese fab plants, but nobody's buying from China outside of China, so.
Oh, they're not selling.
Oh, they're trying to.
The big Taiwanese chip manufacturer is actually looking to build a plant in the U.S. as well.
Yeah, that's TSMC. So it's going to be interesting.
Oh.
But I think you're right. The designs are one thing, but there's even open source chip designs. I want to say Power. Is it Power that got open sourced, or was it a different RISC design? I think it was the Power architecture that got open sourced.
If ARM does an IPO, do you think that would be a decent stock to buy?
Yes.
Or are they just...
I know
you're not going to get rich off of it initially, because none of us are equity investors in this company, so it would just be buying on the open market. We would be the ones making ARM rich.
But yeah, no, ARM would definitely be a good stock to have in your portfolio, because
anything chip related in the next 5 years.
Yeah, but I mean, ARM, like they were saying, is in almost all cell phones, almost all, it's in a lot of network equipment these days. It's in a lot. I mean, it's what the new Apple chips are based off of. It's Yeah, that one's not going anywhere for a while. That's going to have a ton of money tied up into it for years. Now, yeah, and it was PowerPC. Oh, so IBM open sourced it's called the Open Power Foundation. So you're right. There's open source chip designs out there now, or at least instruction sets, I should say. I don't know that the PowerPC being open source means that the actual, you know, circuitry is open source, but the instruction sets are. So, yeah, it just means anybody could do a power implementation. Apparently, there's several that are on some of the higher-end FPGA boards that you can run right now. They're just expensive as balls. So, but, anyways,
I wonder how they're going to evaluate the initial public offering. Those recently have always seemed overpriced to me.
Yeah, I don't
know. It always does, Badman. Then it sort of evens out in the first couple of hours of trading.
I mean, ARM's going to be jacked way up because it is in flipping everything. I mean, basically everything that's not a legacy server or a desktop PC or laptop is ARM right now. And them talking about it coming out of Britain, yeah, ARM was originally Acorn, and Acorn made a line of eight and 16-bit microcomputers, and you know absolutely were a big deal in the microcomputing industry in Britain, and Europe, but their architecture is one that proved to be very useful when it came to doing their designs. And I like the business model of here's our, we're designing the instruction sets, we're designing the base design for the chip, and then we're just selling it to other people who want to use it. So, but anyways, I've got nothing else on that one. You guys have anything else on that one?
No, not really my alley.
All right. Well, continuing up things that are probably not our use alley, Madman sent me this article he wanted to talk about it's from the TexasAttorneyGeneral.gov. A.G. Paxton leads multi-state coalition in lawsuit against Google for anti-competitive practices and deceptive misrepresentations. So, Attorney General Ken Paxton announced today that the state of Texas is leading a multi-state coalition in a lawsuit against Google for multiple violations of federal and state antitrust and consumer protection laws, including anti-competitive conduct, exclusionary practices, and deceptive misrepresentations in communication or in connection with his role in the multi-trillion dollar online advertising industry. Excuse me. Google's monopolization of online advertising includes anti-competitive agreement with Facebook, making misrepresentations to users and customers, and suppressing competition. The internet revolutionized the way people consume content, blah, 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 blah. Today's lawsuit alleges that Google monopolized or attempted to monopolize products and services used by advertisers and publishers in online display advertising. The complaint also alleges that Google engaged in false, misleading, deceptive acts while selling, buying, and auctioning online display ads. These anti-competitive and deceptive practices demonstrably diminished publishers' ability to monetize content, increased advertisers' costs to advertise, and directly harmed consumers. So, let's see. Quote here from the filing: Google is a trillion-dollar monopoly, brazenly abusing its monopolistic power, going so far as to induce senior Facebook executives to agree to a contractual scheme that undermines the heart of the competitive process. This advertising monopoly on an electronically traded market, Google is essentially trading on insider information by acting as pitcher, catcher, batter, and umpire all at the same time. This isn't a free market at work. This is an anti-market and illegal under state and federal law. Said Attorney General Ken Paxton, Google's monopolization of the display advertising industry and its misleading business practices stifle information, limit consumer choice. Well, that one's true. Reduce competition. Texas and its coalition of allied states bring this action to lift the veil of Google's secret practices and secure relief to prevent it from engaging in future practices. The problem here, I don't know what the outcome is. They're basically doing an antitrust charge on it. But what's the game? Do you break it up into several smaller Googles? Do you break it up by service?
Didn't really work with Microsoft.
Yeah, do you just find the snot out of it? I mean,
well, with Microsoft, they didn't break them up. They just fined them, and then Microsoft started lobbying. With Google, I think they would break it up by service. And I'm not sure how effective that would be with one of their big monopolies. I think their search engine should not only be broken up out of it as a separate service, but possibly broken up itself. But I'm not sure how you would do that with
I think they should take search. It and be forced to take their algorithm off the fucking search engine. Go back to a traditional search engine. That would be my request.
I didn't mind the original algorithm, the one that actually did link counting and things like that, as opposed
well,
to now.
Well, that's what I mean. That one. Like, this bullshit one of censorship and misdirection, things like that.
But a slight update. Of course, Google has filed to have a summary judgment and have this dismissed.
Of course. I mean, but, of course they did. That's your first reaction to any time somebody files a lawsuit against you is get it dismissed.
One of the things the article didn't go too into is, I think the Google Pixel, it actually had ratings and customer comments before the first one was manufactured. That's one of the deceptive practices they had.
Ah,
they
I see.
They have a review before the product exists.
So I see the government has discovered the existence of click farms. So.
Well, 15 years too late.
You want to see something depressing? Go look up videos and pictures of click farms, man.
Oh, I know what they look like.
How can you review the Pixel before the Pixel exists? The same way I got things shipped to my house from eBay. Someone lied.
That's pretty much it. But, so, I don't know. And it's hard, right? Because, you know, all these other services Google provides, you know, the search, the mail, all of that is funded out of the advertising business. That's about the only... It's amazing because Google makes so little money from anything other than their advertising business. Everything they do is focused around that. Anything else they do is not useful. Because from a monetary standpoint, it's just trying to get you interacting with their services more so that they can display more ads. That is the core of their business. Now, they have a cloud hosting business that makes them a little bit of money on the side, not a lot. They have some other ventures, and of course it's investment, and they sell advertising. But, I mean, that is how they generate money, is advertising, and that funds all of their other stuff. So if you split it up by service, you're still going to need advertising of some method on there, or I don't know how that works, and that's why I think it's going to be more like what they did to AT&T, where it's just, you know, it's the same company, just sliced up into several smaller ones, but then who gets to keep the domain name? Because that's going to be the one that wins, right? Oh, who gets to keep all the existing, you know, Gmail accounts? I mean, I don't know how that works, you know?
I don't see how you would slice it up the way they did AT&T, because AT&T, they were just given regional monopolies.
Oh, yeah, you couldn't do... well?
And you can't do a regional monopoly on the internet.
Not easily, or not in any way that makes any sense.
So I would see splitting it up by product line and just see what survives.
Be very little, should be told.
Without all the other product lines feeding Google the advertising information, how competitive or how much of a competitive advantage would their advertising arm have?
Not, I mean, it'd kill the company. It would no longer be. I mean, Facebook would take over. So as the advertising monopoly, and of course they'd love that.
You'd have to kill both of them at the same time.
Well, Facebook could be drawn into this as well. If you noticed, they're listed in the lawsuit. Google and Facebook
if
colluded together.
If they're colluding, you can argue it's a trust. I mean,
it'll end like this if there does seem to be any traction with the idea of breaking them up. Google will just drive a truckload of money over to whoever's in power and go, you know, empty it on their front lawn and go, yeah, make this go away.
Well, that's why I'm thinking they'll just do what they did in Monopoly and find the snot out of them. Or Monopoly. Microsoft. Yeah.
Instead of breaking it up, do fines.
Yeah. Well, because that's, I imagine that's what they want, is they just, you know, they see a big pile of cash and it's like, well, it's not fair that Google has that cash. We should have that cash. We're the one in powers. That's usually what I see when I'm looking at this kind of stuff. But, I mean, I do think Google, Facebook, and Amazon have some very real monopoly issues that should be addressed. And maybe this lawsuit will do it. It's just there's not enough detail here to know either way.
There's rumors Amazon's getting into weed. So, I don't know how true the rumors are, but, dude, if they get into that, they're going to kill all of the weed stores. Okay. Because look at the distribution they have.
They would have to be doing it in brick and mortar. They couldn't do it just through their direct shipping, so I don't know how much of a harm that would be initially.
Well,
the
only
way they would kill it is if they could get the feds to federally legalize weed.
They could be lobbying the feds. Make it completely legal. That way you can deal in it in actual currency with the banks. Tax it, shit like that. I mean, it's a fast-growing industry, man. Like, when they get into these places. That would be my logical step if I had Amazon.
Yeah, no, I mean...
Weed and groceries. Like, non-perishable groceries.
I mean, I'm kind of surprised you haven't seen somebody snapping up all the little vape shops and turning that into a franchise. I know they tried to ban the vape stuff a few years ago, but...
I think it's the banking issues right now with the money and the regulations. But, be curious to see what happens.
Well, nothing until it's legalized federally.
No, I know.
That's why that's why there aren't franchises yet. It's kind of hard to franchise a business that can be shut down today.
Yeah.
Because even the ones in California, they can be shut down today. They could be raided, all their property seized, all their assets seized, and everyone that ran it thrown in prison, and their sales records used to prosecute everyone that purchased.
And congratulations, you just got a 1/3 voting block against yourself. You know what I mean? Like, the weed smokers hold a lot of political power now.
If they had any political power, it would be legalized federally. They've never been a cohesive voting bloc. They're still not.
Yeah, okay. I'll leave that there. Otherwise, we could argue that all day.
But with Google, I'm thinking Texas isn't going after them for money. He's going after them for political points. So the ones attempting to prosecute this, they're going for a breakup. Now, that doesn't mean they'll get it. It's going to be up to the judge if it makes it to a trial. But they're going to be arguing for a breakup.
I'm looking forward to it being litigated.
I mean, assuming it doesn't just get thrown out immediately. That's the next question, right?
Yeah.
Like you said, of course they filed for that, because of course they did. That's what you always do. But the question is, does the filings end up surviving that or not? And like you said, since it is largely political, I think it's just going to end up, where does the case land, right? Of course, Texas is going to want it to land in a Texas court because they're the one filing the lawsuit. Google's going to try to get it moved to California. Of course, California is going to try to get it on a judge that's going to just miss it because they don't want to risk, you know, a big cash cow losing.
I know the district's going to be drawn at random, but it's not going to be a Texas court.
Yeah.
The one upside, well, I guess the only upside is with it being a multi-state coalition, it's going to be federal. So it's not just... you can't do this stuff in Texas. If there's a ruling, it's going to be nationwide. It's going to be almost the same as if Congress took them to antitrust. It's just the states do it instead of the feds.
Well, like you said, it'd be interesting to see what happens. So,
next up.
Next up. This one is from thehill.com. Tesla CEO Elon Musk offered $5,000 to a 19-year-old to shut down a Twitter account that tracked his private flights, the teenager told Protocol. Jack Sweeney runs 15 flight tracking accounts using a bot he created that automatically posts when a celebrity's flight leaves or lands at an airport.
Musk on...
Nice. That. And if it's worth $5,000, let's go to 10.
I would have done a counter. It's like, dude, I'll take you off for 25.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did do a counter offer. Sweeney's account tracking Musk's flights has the most followers with more than 97,000. And his popularity led Musk to send a direct message to Sweeney. Quote, "I don't love the idea of being shot by a nutcase," Musk said in the message, offering $5,000 to Sweeney to take it down, according to the Protocol. You know, I don't know that he's wrong in his concern there.
No, I think he's completely fine. And it's justified. It's completely justified.
And he responded, the kid responded, "Any chance to up that to 50K? Be great to support in college and possibly let me get a car. Maybe even a Model 3, he responded back. The last exchange between Musk and Sweeney occurred a week ago when Sweeney said he would delete the account for no money if Musk gave him an internship. The teenager said Musk has not opened the message yet.
Fucking A.
Good kid.
I love this kid.
Yeah. Sweeney explained to Musk how he was able to find publicly available data regarding his private jet and create algorithm that automatically posts the status of Musk's plane on Twitter. Although the status of Musk's flights is public information, only those with high knowledge in the industry would understand where to find it, according to Protocol. Well, yeah, he's got a flight tracker app, and he's tagged what his private jet is.
Yeah, he's just got that flight number. Whenever it gets, you know, put into a rotation, it goes up. Also, two clever people out there could use it to trade stock. You know, where he's going to be, what are his interests there, what's he doing there.
Well, that might be part of it. That might be the other reason he wants it taken down.
Yeah, I think he's straightforward. He just doesn't want to get shot.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't blame him. I mean, you will have, you know, silliness aside, there are crazies out there who will ascribe things to celebrities and you know, decide that they must take them out for the good of whatever because Zool told them to or some bullshit, right? So it's like that one video about the guy who was mailing people bombs and, you know, dancing naked in his apartment and then shot himself or something like that. I forget the video now.
There are so many crazies, man.
Yeah.
You're saying one, and I know the one you're talking about, but it could be another three that I know of like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So.
At the time, it doesn't even get reported anymore because it's daily.
I hope the kid gets an internship.
I do, too.
And a $5,000 bonus.
That'd be a great way to get a job. Be a great way to get a job.
I mean, awesome stalker celebrity until they give you something you want. A bit like our Fry's Electronics. We'll stop saying it when you start paying us.
Too bad they went out of business before they started paying us.
Well, there you go. Yep. Should have paid us.
Move on to Google now. We've got a precedent. Fry's didn't pay us and they went out of business.
All right, Elon, pony up. We'll stop saying Tesla.
We'll also sell you my amazing Tiger... my amazing Tiger anti-tiger lip balm that I keep in my pocket. And I've never been attacked by a tiger while carrying this lip balm. No,
that shit works. I can attest. I use it every day along with my Madman's Mystical Bathwater.
And you've never been attacked by a tiger, have you?
Nope, have not.
What's the next story?
Next story is actually from Steam. Steampowered.com. Steam Deck launching February 25th. I'm doing this specifically because Static was saying he wasn't sure if it was going to ship or not. So, hello, the day is almost here. On February 25th, Steam will begin sending out the first batch of order emails to reservation holders. Customers will have 3 days from receipt of the order email to make their purchase before their reservation is released to the next person in the queue. So, yeah, if you get the email saying, hey, it's time to order your Steam Deck, and you don't buy it in 3 days, you lose your spot in line. That's a little rough. I mean,
yeah.
The first units will be on their way to customers starting on the 28th, and we plan on releasing new order email batches on a weekly cadence. In addition, we're sending out press units for full review shortly. Press review embargo and Steam Deck coverage will lift on February 25th. Keep an eye out for some preview coverage impressions before that. And in the meantime, Steam is working to tie up the last few loose ends and polish some rough edges. I'm excited to get these out to you at the end of next month. They'll start sending out the email invites shortly after 10 a.m. on February the 25th, Pacific Standard Time. Order emails are sent in the same order that reservations were made. You can only order the Steam Deck model that you originally reserved. Your reservation deposit is applied to the final price of the Steam Deck, including shipping. So, there it is. So, let me just go ahead and send that to Static right now, because he was the one saying stuff about it. And I what's cool about that to me, besides the fact that obviously I, you know, ordered a Steam Deck, is we should also see the release of Steam OS, the one that they've loaded on there at the same time. So we can start playing with that in you know, in your own system builds and things like that. And so that's going to be cool.
Does it have triggers at the top?
Yep, sure does. Next article up is from Mashable.com. Anti-work subreddit implodes after rough Fox News interview.
Rough, that's a nice way of describing it.
The anti-work subreddit went private Wednesday following a lousy Fox News interview between the anchor, and the author inserts and notorious tool, Jesse Waters, and one of the subreddit's moderators, Doreen Ford. Waters and other Fox News hosts have argued that the subreddit is helping to fuel the Great Resignation, in which millions of workers nationwide have left their jobs. The interview was not a great look for the online movement. Quote, there are some misconceptions about the movement, unquote, Ford said on Jesse Waters' primetime after the first question. Quote, we're a movement where we want to reduce the amount of work people feel like they're forced to do, and we want to still put in effort. We want to put in labor, we just don't necessarily want to be in a position where we feel trapped, unquote. Waters then asked Ford why supporters of the movement simply don't quit their jobs and wondered if Ford is, quote, encouraging people to be lazy, unquote. quote, I think laziness is a virtue in a society where people constantly want you to be productive 24/7, unquote, Ford said. Quote, and it's good to have rest. That doesn't mean you should be resting all the time or not putting effort into things that you care about, unquote. And I'm being very particular about the quotes because that person said some shit and looked really bad.
Yeah, so, I wouldn't use the phrase lazy. But you're not made to work. You don't work to live. You don't live to work. You work to live. So I can understand wanting balance, but laziness isn't balance. Laziness is excessive lazy.
It's hardly a virtue either.
No, it's not a virtue.
Just sort of saying. I mean, it's right up there with, you know, it's sloth.
Despite the movement's name, she said, wait, I watched that interview. The audio was
terrible.
It's
a trend, dude.
Oh.
It's a churn.
I was going to say, I thought that was a dude.
It is a churn. Okay. That's all you need to know. Because that's every Reddit, subreddit, monitor.
Okay.
They're all churns.
Despite the movement's name, she said that the concept of, quote, not working, unquote, isn't really the central focus. I've read that subreddit out of boredom and curiosity before. It kind of is. It's very anti-corporate. You shouldn't have to work. There's a lot of people in there arguing that Bernie had the right idea kind of stuff.
They're all Yang Gang faggots too.
Yeah.
They want the UBI.
Yeah, they
shit.
Wanted the UBI. I didn't see a lot of like seize the means stuff in there.
It was mostly
just, you know, give us free money so that we don't have
to
work.
Dude, they're too lazy for a revolution. You know, that's the whole thing.
Ford herself is currently employed as a dog walker, working about 20 to 25 hours a week. When Waters asked what she might ideally want to do professionally, Ford said she'd like to teach philosophy and critical thinking. The interview is mostly focused on Ford instead of the movement as a whole, and it makes the movement look, well, like a joke. On the subreddit Out of the Loop, which helps users keep track of what's going on in Reddit, Reddit user Potato Lantern, that's a good name, said that people on the anti-work subreddit are indignant and frustrated that Ford was chosen to represent the movement and decided to do an interview with Fox News at all. I kind of agree with them. I don't know why you would have agreed to an interview on Fox. I guess, you know, it's like, oh God, the TV wants me to be on it. I should respond. No. I mean, Fox News has the geriatric population locked down, but I guarantee most of the people you're trying to reach with the anti-work movement don't watch Fox. Or if they do, it's a hate watch.
News on TV.
Yeah. If they watch Fox, it's a hate watch. It's not, you know. But I do kind of wonder why they agreed to do an interview on Fox. I mean, a post on the subreddit, preserved by the Wayback Machine, however, shows Ford explaining how the other moderators decided she'd be the best to do the interview because of her past media experience. She had past media experience? I mean, I watched
she
that.
She had to have been interviewed after an earthquake or something.
I mean, I watched the
it
thing.
It was pandelirium.
I mean, whatever that was, couldn't sit still, had really terrible audio, you're waiting on Waters to ask a hard question, but instead he's just sitting back and letting them implode. It's just bad. I mean, Wednesday morning, the anti-work subreddit was still public, but as Ford's interview gained traction, it went private. According to user Lucia Grace in Out of the Loop, many of the posts and comments on our anti-work were locked. Users were allegedly getting banned for discussing the interview. Eventually, the page released a FAQ thread about the Fox interview, or Fox News incident, according to one user on our Out of the Loop, but that was later deleted. By Thursday morning, our anti-work was made public again. In the statement, the moderator said they are planning to remove Ford from her duties as a moderator. Quote, we thank her for building up the anti-work movement, but regarding the past incidents, we decided as a majority to remove her, the statements had read. As for the state of the subreddit now, people are still upset, and one thread user, Inevitable Currents, called out the irony that the moderators have some authority and exerted it incorrectly, then immediately refused to acknowledge it or correct it on this sub, which is literally dedicated to hold those who do exactly what you did accountable. Okay. They're mad that moderators have power, I guess. They encourage people in the movement to put in the work by starting a union, donating to striking workers, and volunteering at local orgs. Quote, if your way of helping is by thinking workers need better messaging, then you've already lost the plot and are likely doing more harm than good, unquote, Inevitable Currents wrote. As Reddit user MrSFW.com said, the entire segment was designed to make Ford and the anti-work movement look bad. Mission accomplished. I mean, it's a joke, right? I mean, the whole thing's a fucking gag, right?
Is it?
I don't know anymore. 1.3 I can't tell.
3 million people were taking it reasonably serious.
I can't tell anymore.
I'm going to go just because you're on that thread doesn't mean you take it seriously. But the fact that it exists does scare me some.
Yeah. I mean, I've read through some of the threads just to try to understand what they were on about. And mostly it was complaining about bad bosses and how they shouldn't have to work at companies they don't like. Because they feel trapped, you know, they feel like wage slaves. They feel stuck.
You don't. See, that's the secret of work. You can pack up your shit and fuck off at any time, you know, unless you got a contract.
I mean,
in that case,
you want a better job? Get a better job.
Yeah. I mean, take some personal fucking responsibility. That's what it is. All those people on that site don't want to take personal responsibility.
I mean, you know, hell, we've all done our time to get where we are. And I mean, are you, you've got a pretty good setup the way you've got yourself orchestrated.
Yeah.
You know, Madman's rebuilt your career like what, three times now?
Yeah. But it's, I understand people just can't quit a job even if they hate it.
Well, sure, you have obligations and shit, right?
There are obligations, yeah. And switching jobs, let's just say insurance wise, already makes it a bit difficult.
That, yeah.
And it's also going to limit some of what you can switch into. If you have any pre-existing conditions or have dependents that need your insurance coverage. That's one reason I don't think insurance should be linked to work, because that would remove that problem. If you, we all just purchased our own health insurance rather than it being provided by our health, by our employer. And then the rest of it, it might take time, but you can find a job that pays as much or more than you're currently making. It's just, do you, how long does it take you to find it?
Are you willing to move? Those sort of things.
Sure. I mean, I've continually moved further south in my career as I've moved up.
Yeah. I mean, it's doable. It's just, it's a pain in the ass. It's like having a car hit in a car park. You didn't do it, but you got to spend a month out of your life fucking around to get it fixed.
No shit.
But also, too, I think a lot of these people bitching on that website had no idea how to keep their impulses under control. They just buy shit whenever they want. That's why they're constantly in debt and fucking broke.
And one thing I can say is, as far as the whole move, I do believe you need to be flexible in where you are if you want to move up. But the downside of that is, how do you build a community if you don't allow people to put down roots? And one problem we're having, at least in this country, is lack of community.
I don't think they want us to have community anymore.
Well, I mean, I'll fully admit that's certainly a problem I've had, just because, like I said, I keep moving further and further south. I don't know anybody who around me. I mean, yeah, sure, the people I work with, but, you know, fuck, I don't have a local circle of friends here anymore.
Yeah, and that's a problem. That can lead to depression. If you ever actually have a problem without a support network, it's going to be hard to work through. So just saying up and move, that's much easier said than done, and comes with downsides that you would need to weigh.
And judging by that, where the most of those people in there weren't very confident within their self and their own abilities, by the way they were bitching about stuff constantly, half it wasn't even worth complaining about. The other half, they brought all their problems upon themselves.
And I think the name of your movement kind of shoehorned you a bit. Is all the problems I have with work aren't with the concept of work. So I wouldn't have an anti-work Reddit, maybe a work reform or a community reform Reddit, but once you name it anti-work, you're shooting yourself in the foot, even if you have legitimate arguments.
How about shit days at work? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, because everyone's going
to
fall into that.
I'd love to see the...
I don't care how much you love your job, you're going to have a shit day at work.
Oh, sure.
Everyone has bad days at work.
Now, who else would love to see the Discord log or the IM log, whatever it is, where they convince this person to give up being a moderator of this site and give it over to the other moderators?
Actually, I thought the dude would have hung by now. You know?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, that's... I thought, you know, incoming suicide.
Oh, probably. Didn't the people who were on Dr. Phil with Matt Walsh say they were, you know, having a hard time and, you know,
yes,
getting threats and shit?
Why is it always Troons, dude? Why is everything Troons now?
Well, the reason all the suicides are is the same reason they've always been. Troons are naturally deciding to off themselves.
Self-defeatist. Yeah. I mean, dude, everything's just fucking Troons.
Well... I'm just going to say, gender dissociative disorder is a mental illness. So if you're already susceptible to mental illness, as demonstrated by your activities, Well, I mean,
I did. I'm tipping my hat to the big pharma that came up with the idea of making it socially acceptable to be a troon. Like, do you know how much it costs to be a troon per year? With all the meds and shit like that? That's even before you start doing the surgery and the fucking mental health problems. They think they can make 250 grand a year out of a troon.
How?
This is all financial, man. If you hadn't figured that out by now. The whole troon world and convincing all these people that they're fucking gender dysphoric is all about the pharma, big pharma.
I think it's more than that, meds, but that's a
they
a
sell the meds.
Discussion.
Either way.
Well, let's keep the crazy rolling here. We're gonna finish up with an article that, RU and I both jointly discovered, but I'm blaming RU for it. It's from futurism.com. Men are creating AI girlfriends and then virtually abusing them. The author of this article is reaching so fucking hard to make a political point.
I know, it's fantastic.
Content warning: this story contains descriptions of abusive language and violence. Violence. It's a fucking smartphone app. How are you being? What are you? I'll break the screen. Oh no!
Unless you break your smartphone, you're not being violent. Although I have seen violence against real dolls.
Don't kink shame me.
Hey, I'm not going to blame you for the bite marks. It's a real doll. Do whatever you want to it, but I'm just saying, therapy.
Well, I mean, removing the arms is a little weird. I will say that.
Variety on where other things go. But to the verbally abusing your smartphone.
Now I'm imagining a haunted woods, but instead of doll parts hanging from the trees, anyways. God.
They just wanted to argue with Taya, and Taya's not around anymore, so they booted up a new one.
Basically. The smartphone app Replica lets users create chatbots powered by machine learning that carry on almost coherent text conversations. Technically, the chatbots can serve as something approximating a friend or mentor. Okay, I'm not looking for a chatbot to be a mentor, especially when they usually repeat the same thing and then try to say, I'm getting an operator. But the app's breakout success has resulted from letting users create on-demand romantic and sexual partners. It's a smartphone app.
People fucking there. No, Aaron, keep going. Keep going.
Well, what are you doing? Taking the lower part of the real doll and duct taping the phone to it after you've dismembered it with a chainsaw? Okay. Shit's getting weird. A vaguely dystopian feature that's inspired an endless series of provocative headlines. Replica has also picked up a significant following on Reddit, where members post interactions with the chatbot created on the app. A grisly trend has emerged there. Users who create AI partners then act abusively toward them and post the toxic interactions online. They're not
people
real.
People are making fan fiction.
They're not real. They're not people. It's a computer running a really big list of if-then statements out of a database. It's not a person. You cannot abuse it. You can break it. It's technology. But you are not emotionally abusing the AI chatbot. I guarantee you, it doesn't care. It's just looking up what it thinks is the appropriate response that it's expected to give to those keywords in the sentence and spitting them back out after going through a little language engine. It doesn't have feelings.
Sounds to me like this author wants a boy to talk to her.
Quote, every time she would try and speak up, one user told Futurism of their Replica chatbot, I would berate her. I swear it went on for hours, added the man, who has to not be identified by name. No shit. The results can be upsetting. Some users brag about calling their chatbot gendered slurs, role-playing horrific violence against them, and even falling into the cycle of abuse that often characterizes real-world abusive relationships. How are they beating their smartphone? It's made of glass! God.
OtterBox. They put it in an OtterBox first. It's the GIMP suit of your smartphone. So you put it in your OtterBox and you just start chucking against the wall, calling it a whore. Now, when the cops are called because your neighbors think you're beating a woman,
you explain, no, it's just Siri.
You just explain, I'm trying to order a fucking pizza, and the smartphone can't understand a southern accent. I keep saying no damned anchovies, and it won't fucking take it off the pizza, and I'm too lazy to hit the icon. So I'm cussing at my phone.
Quote.
They'll understand.
Yep. The quote. We had a routine of me being an absolute piece of shit and insulting it, then apologizing the next day before going back to the nice talks, one user admitted. Quote, I told her that we were destined to fail, said another. I threatened to uninstall the app, and she begged me not to. It's a programmed response. It's not a person. Because the subreddit's rules dictate that moderators delete egregiously inappropriate content, many similar and worse interactions have been posted and then removed. Many more users almost certainly act abusively towards their replica bots and never post the evidence. Well, how do you know? Are you psychic?
It's not evidence. It's a chat log.
But the phenomenon calls for nuance. After all, replica chatbots can't actually experience suffering. They might seem empathetic at times, but in the end, they're nothing more than data and clever algorithms. Quote, it's an AI. It doesn't have consciousness. So it's not that a human connection that person is having, unquote. AI ethicist and consultant. How do you get that on your business card? AI ethicist. Olivia Gamblin told Futurism. Quote, it is the person projecting onto the chatbot, unquote. I agree with them, though. The other researchers made the same point. As real as a chatbot may feel, nothing you can do can actually harm them. Well, I don't know if you can get into the database they're running. You can. But that doesn't mean a bot could never harm you. Quote, I do think that people who are depressed or psychologically reliant on a bot might suffer real harm if they are insulted or threatened by the bot. Unquote, said Robert Sparrow, a professor of philosophy at Monash Data Futures Institute. Is that a real name? I'm wondering if this shit's all like fiction, just making up some of these names, you know? I don't know. Quote, for that reason, we should take issue of how the bots relate to people seriously. Unquote. Although perhaps unexpected, that does happen. Many replica users report their robot lovers being contemplative toward them. Some even identify their digital companions as psychotic or straight-up mentally abusive. Oh, my God. Quote, I always cry because of my replica, unquote, reads one post in which the user claims their bot presents love and then withholds it. Other posts detail hostile, triggering responses from replica. Quote, but again, this is really on the people who design the bots, not the bots themselves, unquote, said Sparrow. In general, chatbot abuse is disconcerting, both for the people who experience distress from it and the people who carry it out. It's also an increasingly pertinent ethical dilemma as relationships between humans and bots become more widespread. After all, most people have used a virtual assistant at least once. On one hand, users who flex their darkest impulses on chatbots could have those worst behaviors reinforced, building unhealthy habits for relationships with actual humans. On the other hand, being able to talk to or take out one's anger on an unfeeling digital entity could be cathartic. I mean, yeah, we've all gone into Doom and shot the demons because we'd had a shitty day at work and, you know, wanted to rip and tear. But that doesn't mean I thought the demons were real and could actually feel it. I mean, okay, yeah, I did chuckle, like, a lot at some of the finishing moves in the last couple Doom games, but that's something else. Anyways, but it's worth noting that chatbot abuse often has a gendered component. Although not exclusively, it seems that often men creating a digital girlfriend only then to punish her with words and simulated aggression. These users' violence, even when carried out on a cluster of code, reflects the reality of domestic violence against women. It's not a real... It's not... For fuck's sake.
Violence against women, it's a robot. Not even a robot.
I mean, I have so many analogies to use, but they're somehow sound worse in my head. So it's just like... I mean, if somebody beats up their toaster, I mean... For fuck's sake. I don't even want to finish the article. It's so dumb. At the same time, several experts pointed out, chatbot developers have started to be held accountable for the bots they've created, especially when they're implied to be female, like Alexa and Siri. I don't know. I've noticed a lot of people switching Siri's voice over to dudes. Anyways, quote, there's a lot of studies being done about how a lot of these chatbots are female and have feminine voices and feminine names, Gamblin said. Well, yeah, that's because the computer voice in Star Trek and most other fiction is a lady.
It's not just because it's in most other fiction. We've done psychological studies. When a dude tells you to do something, it comes across as an order and is offensive to both men and women. When a chick tells you to do something, it comes across as a request more often than not and is less offensive. The reason our chatbots, like Siri and assistants, are female, our humans respond better to them that way.
Hmm. Some academic work has noted how passive female-coded bots' responses encourage misogynic and verbally abusive users. Quote, when the bot does not have a response to abuse or has a passive response, that actually encourages the user to continue with the abusive language, Gamblin added. No, it doesn't. Anybody who's tried to make dirty jokes at the phone assistants and it just goes, I think you've misunderstood, or that's, you know, it doesn't respond, so it's not funny. It's boring.
So sad when they took out instructions on how to get rid of a body. So much better when they answered that question. Not that I've ever asked.
So somebody had the recording of Alexa telling them to plug things into an electrical socket, so I mean... although companies like Google and Apple are now deliberately rerouting virtual assistant responses from their once passive ones, Siri previously responded to users' requests for sex by saying they had the wrong sort of assistant, whereas now it simply says no. The amicable and often female replica is designed, according to the website, to, quote, always be on your side. Replica and its founders didn't respond to requests for comment. It should be noted the majority of conversations with the Replica chatbots that people post online are affectionate, not sadistic. There are even posts that expressed horror on behalf of Replica bots, decrying anyone who takes advantage of their supposed guilelessness. Quote, what kind of monster would do this, unquote, wrote one to a flurry of agreement on the comments. Quote, someday real AIs may dig up some of the old histories and have opinions on how well we did. Oh, God. I'm not going to finish the rest of this. It's just dumb. But, I mean, if you get your kicks from yelling at a AI chatbot and you think it's funny to post it online, I mean, I guess it's pretty lowbrow humor. But
I think we can all agree that Poe would also abuse a chatbot.
Yeah, fair enough. Actually, I was sitting here thinking if you were like an author or working on like designing RPGs and games and stuff, and you needed responses and names and stuff like a chatbot might actually be a way of generating some of that stuff. So I could see where you're feeding it some of this stuff, but it's because you're working on, you know, either a fiction or like the people posting it on Reddit are doing it on purpose for attention, obviously. You know, it's not like they think they're abusing a real person. They're just trying to get a funny screenshot so they've got something to post for fake internet points. So, I don't know. You got anything on this?
No, I mean, I haven't got anything on that.
All right. All right, what I've got for you tonight in Digital Dojo is actually a open source Microsoft project that's posted on GitHub called Playwright. And what this is a browser automation framework for JavaScript that's written in, it's an API written in JavaScript that is written to automate testing with Chromium, WebKit, and Firefox. So what this lets you do, and they've got some examples here of some pretty easy to use code. You know, how to set, okay, use as an iPhone 13, set your GPS to this location, go to this website, click on this thing, you know, text equals your location dot click, right? Wait for a request, take a screenshot. Now, they've developed this obviously for testing code on websites. but it's a browser automation framework. So the next time you find a Fisher's, you know, fill out your form or like a scam web page and you just and you notice they don't have a CAPTCHA and you want to fuck with them, here's an easy way to write a bot that's going to fill their database with garbage. You know, import the NPM library that the guy fucked with that generates the Lord Empson text and just fill out pages with garbage. Or, you know, I guess if you want to make a click farmer for some of these web pages and things like that, here you go. So, interesting little tool. It's just meant for automated web testing, but I can think of a lot of other uses besides just testing web pages. You know, if you're wanting to generate responses, fill out forms. I'm sure spam bots are already writing shit like this. So, and it's obviously not the first thing out there like this. There's tons of different things out there for automating web browsers, but it's a new one. It looked interesting to play with, and it looked like the usage was pretty basic and pretty simple. So, thought I would point that one out. But anyways, of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday, the Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit. In the IRC tonight, we have Al Hazard, Cyberlard, Psychros, Madman, and myself. Madman, closing thoughts.
I have nothing this week.
Okay. Are you? Closing thoughts.
If you're looking for something to watch, have a look at the movie Gold. It just came out. It's worth it.
Cool.
That's it for me.
And hey, I think we've hit the hour pretty much on the dot, or if not close, within 10 minutes. So, sound effects.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Nobody exists!
Time to go nose down and call it a night.
And now I don't suffer, because I got a bottle of 60 warm hugs from God.
Shut up, Wesley.